Proverbs chapter 12. And we'll go to the Lord in prayer. Pray for all those that aren't with us today. And then we'll get started. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Just thank you for your blessings on us, Lord. We thank you for the day that you've given us, Lord. We thank you for your word that you've given us and that we're able to come out and study it for a little bit here this evening, Lord. I just pray that you'd be with our time here in your word, Lord. I do pray that you'd be with just all of our church family, Lord. And I know there are several that's still without water and without electricity, Lord. I just pray you'd help them, Lord, that that would be restored soon. I just pray be with those who are working and those who are traveling, the different things that's going on. And Lord, I just pray you'd help our church to help it to grow. Lord, help us, Lord, to be a witness to the people that we're around. Lord, help us, Lord, to be able to shed the light abroad on other folks, Lord, just that people would come out, that they would be saved, Lord, that they would be discipled and growing in their walk with you, Lord. Just be with our church folks, Lord, the ones that could be here that aren't, that you just give them more of a desire to be in church and to grow in their walk with you. And Lord, we just thank you so much for all that you do for us, Lord, and ask you just to guide and direct us as we study your word tonight. In Jesus' name I pray, and amen. Okay, so we're looking at short proverbs that kind of stand alone. And last week, I don't know, I have a note here. I can't remember which ones we covered last week. Did we start with 8 last week?
Yeah.
Okay. So in 8, wisdom exalts in time. Verse 9, don't exalt yourself. Be content where you're at. Verse 10, esteem others of all stripes. Doesn't matter who they are, where they're at. Instead of looking down to them, esteem them, lift them up. Verse 11, hard work pays better than foolishness. Verse 12, focus on what you can grow. Focus on what you can grow rather than what others have. Verse 13, make your words true and not traps. And verse 14, your words and works will return to you. Make sure that they are good. So when we come to verse number 15, we'll be talking about counsel. And I think most of the verses that we're looking at tonight are going to have to do with our words, with the things that we say. And we also kind of have the idea of a fool running through this. And I guess that's a lot of Proverbs is teaching you how not to be a fool, right? How to identify the fool, what things God sees as foolishness. And so in verse 15, it says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. And as we look at the first mark of a fool tonight, he is wise in his own eyes. He thinks that he knows it all. He thinks that he understands it all. He thinks that he doesn't need any help or doesn't need any input from anybody else, that he's got it all figured out. And the problem with that is that a person is easily blinded to their own faults and their own limitations. We don't know what we don't know. And I've said that oftentimes, but the longer I live, the more true it is. We don't know what we don't know. And the more we think we know, the more deceived we are. And so we are limited. But a fool will go forward in error confidently, but a wise man will go forward in truth cautiously. Okay, so there's a big difference between the two of those. You see someone who thinks they know what they're doing and they won't listen to anyone. They're just running ahead. And the next thing you know, they get themselves in a heap of trouble because they wouldn't listen, right? They just march ahead and they do so confidently. And sometimes that's, I hate to say this, sometimes that's the funny ones. Because, you know, you try to tell them, you try to talk to them, and they just won't hear anything. And you just see them going right into the trap that they've set for themselves. And then afterward, you're just like, told you so. But you wouldn't listen. Now, it depends. You don't want to see someone ruin their lives or get in huge trouble or anything. But, you know, just small foolishness. It's like, yeah, I could have told you, but you wouldn't listen. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said, a foolish man will go forward in error confidently. A wise man will go forward in truth cautiously because he knows he doesn't know it all. So even whenever he's on the right path, he's going to be paying attention to what's going on around him. He's still going to be looking and checking and making sure because he realizes those errors, those limitations. Good counsel will vet your motives, will call out blind spots, will bring up solutions that you never even thought of. You know, you start talking to someone and say, okay, I'm going through this and I'm not sure what to do. And they might say, well, have you ever considered this? No, I haven't. But that's a good idea. Glad you thought of that, right? And so that's one of the big benefits to seeking out counsel is not only can they see the where you're maybe flawed in your perspective, blind spots, as I said, but also they can tell you things that you never even thought of, solutions that you never considered, or they might bring up problems you never saw. Like, hey, I'm going to do this. I think this is a good idea. And they're like, well, what about this? Oh, shoot, I never thought of that. That's a big problem. Well, I'm glad I didn't do that. I'm glad I asked you, right? And so with that, we find that a wise man is going to seek after good counsel, but a foolish man will listen to no one. Solomon's son Rehoboam is a good example of this principle. He did seek out counsel, but rather than vetting the counsel and paying attention to what they were saying, he just picked whoever was telling him what he wanted to say. And that is a problem as well. A lot of people say, oh, I went and talked to people about it. I went and asked counsel. I went and discussed it with my friend or with this person or with that person. But we've got to be careful who we're asking, who we're getting counsel from, because if they're just telling us what we want to hear, if they just think the same way as we think, then that doesn't really help any, right? It's kind of like, have you ever heard of an echo chamber? Whenever they just basically say what you want to hear back to you. And you're not really asking for someone who's going to push back or call you out or challenge you in any way. They're just going to say, oh, yeah, sounds great. Just a bunch of yes men. And that's kind of what Rehoboam went to is he went to his friends who grew up with him and told him what he wanted to hear, the things that that sounded good but weren't good for him. And it got him into a lot of trouble. So you'll be greatly benefited if you allow people in your lives to give counsel and if you will humbly seek counsel whenever you are in a place of decision. So don't underestimate counsel, but at the same time, be careful who you are taking counsel from. Okay? Because Amnon had a friend. Right? He got counsel. What was that guy's name? Started with a J, I think. Anyway, I say Jonadab, but I don't think that was it. But anyway, Amnon's friend, his cousin, told him what he wanted to hear and got several people killed in the process. Anyway, so the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth to counsel is wise. Verse 16, a fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame. What does it mean a fool's wrath is presently known?
The person that a fool's mad, they let everyone know
it's mad. Okay. So they have no self-control. It's whenever they get upset, everybody knows about it, right? So why is that foolish? You do stupid things whenever you react rather than acting, right? Reacting is whenever you just do the first thing that comes up, whenever you are guided by emotions and feelings and you haven't actually taken time to think through things, right? And so the fool, it says, his wrath is presently known. Whenever we look at the fruit of the Spirit, temperance is one of the fruit of the Spirit, right? Temperance means self-control. Whenever someone loses their temper, that means they have lost control of themselves, right? They get angry. And whenever you lose your temper, your wrath is presently known. That's what that means. And so anyway, whenever You lose your temper. You'll make a fool out of yourself quickly. Many people have done very foolish things in a fit of rage or a moment of emotion whenever their feelings won out and all self-control stopped. It's funny how that works. It doesn't have to be just anger, but it seems like anger is the most explosive of them, right? It can be sadness. It can be disappointment. It can be despair, depression, discouragement. All the negative emotions that we feel, if we allow them to take the wheel, they will cause us to do dumb things. We have to keep those things bridled in. I'm not saying keep them stuffed down and pretend like they don't exist. If we look through the book of Psalms, the psalmist went through all sorts of negative emotions, right? And those are recorded for us, and they're good. They're something that God has given us. They're something that help us process things. They're things that help protect us and help us to learn and help us to grow. But they are tools. They are servants. They are not masters. Okay? And so they do have their purpose. They have their place. But we have to be careful not to be brought under control of them. And so whenever we have an immediate response, it gives no time to think. It allows emotions to be in the driver's seat rather than truth, rather than facts, rather than our brains. And a prudent man or a smart man can conceal or can control all of the negative emotions that would cause him to do negative or shameful things. And so it's not hiding them down, pretending like everything's okay, faking it until you make it, but it is controlling yourself until you have time to process all of the feelings, all of the situations, all of the information that you're going through, and then respond to it properly, right? Someone does something extremely mean to you, you lash out and beat the snot out of them. Makes bigger problems then, right? But if you take time and you think through it, calm down just a little bit, you can respond properly, and the relationship can continue unharmed. You can make up, you can take knowledge of how that person treated you and say, okay, I'm going to behave differently around that person from now on. I'm going to put some boundaries between me and that person, not so that I can hurt them or out of pettiness, but to guard our own selves, right? Does that make sense? So we're vetting the information. The emotions are there. The emotions come up and say, hey, there's something wrong here, but we need to think things through. We need to look at it. We need to vet those emotions rather than just lashing out and letting our anger, our wrath be presently known, because that tends to explode. It tends to escalate. Nothing good comes of it. But as I said, there's nothing wrong with the emotions or feeling them, but don't let them control. Ephesians 4:26 says, be ye angry and sin not. Okay? So it doesn't say don't be angry. It says, okay, you're going to get angry, but don't let it control you and don't let it cause you to sin. Okay? Anger is not a sin. It's what we do when we're angry that's a sin. Right? Honestly, I don't know that it would be possible to not get angry sometimes. Right? It's kind of like the idea of temptation. Temptation is not a sin, but acting on temptation is a sin. Anger is not a sin, but acting on temptation acting on anger is a sin. Or allowing anger to stay on you, allowing it to burn within you, allow it to affect your thoughts and your actions and your attitudes. That's whenever it's sinful, right? But just getting angry, that is an emotion, that is a response, just like sadness or happiness or anything else. You know, you see something nice and you get happy. It's a feeling, right? You see something really sad and you start to cry. There's not a whole lot of control over that, is there? Now, you can try to stuff it down, pretend it doesn't happen, but it's still there, just the same as anger. So, like I said, they're there for a reason, but make sure that they're not in the driver's seat. They're not controlling you. So a fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame. Verse 17, he that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness, but a false witness deceit. Matthew 12:34 says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. What is inside of a man is what comes out of a man. Just the same as Anything else? Whenever you cut something open, you see what's inside of it. That's what comes out of it, right? And we're not going to cut people open. Not a good idea. But anyway, whenever we look at verse number 17, a man who is speaking truth, one who is of integrity, someone who has an honest character about them, someone who is known for being truthful, shows forth righteousness. He's manifesting it. He's showing the material that he's made from, right? The cloth he's made out of. So someone who is telling the truth, even whenever it doesn't benefit them, even whenever it would be tempting to tell a lie, it's showing the type of character that they have, showing that they are a righteous person, right? But you put somebody in a difficult situation. You put them in a tricky situation where they are going to try to wiggle their way out of it, and they lie. We would excuse that, right? And say, well, they were in a bad spot. They were in a tricky situation. Whenever you squeeze someone or something, what comes out of it tells a lot about it, right? You squeeze a lemon, what comes out of a lemon?
It's salt.
Lemon juice, right? Squeeze an orange. Orange juice comes out of it. Squeeze an apple. Apple juice comes out of it. If you squeeze someone and lies come out of them, then that lets you know that there is dishonesty. It lets you know that there is deceit, that they have a deceitful heart within them. And so anyway, if you squeeze someone and they still tell the truth, if they get in difficult situations and still have godly character, that lets you know that it runs all the way through them, that it comes from who they are. They're not putting it on, it's not a show, but instead it is their character and what they're made out of. And so he that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness, but a false witness, deceit. So someone who speaks lies tells you they can't be trusted, that they are a deceitful person. If someone will lie about little things, then they will lie about anything. If they'll lie about a small thing, that means you have to be suspicious of everything they say, right? Ever been around someone, they said, oh, it's just a little white, or a little white lie. It's harmless. It's not anything big. Doesn't really matter. If a person will lie about anything, everything they say is under suspicion. Because it's allowing you to see their character. It's allowing you to see who they are, their attitude toward right and wrong, their attitude toward what is good and what's not. We find that God is light and in him is no darkness at all, right? So what about a Christian who is mostly light, but they got a little bit dark? Still a problem, right? And so a man's honesty proclaims his righteousness, but a man who lies can't be trusted. Even small lies makes all things questionable. Okay, we come down to verse number 18. Hey, we're flying through this tonight, aren't we? Verse 18. There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. Anyone want to take a stab at that?
Words can hurt.
They can. Let's look at Psalm 52. The psalmist has a lot to say about a lot of things, but about our words too. Psalm 52 and 2, it says, the tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor working deceitfully. That sounds a lot similar to Solomon, right? David and Solomon had a lot of run-ins with people with sharp tongues. You think about David, whenever he's running from Absalom, he runs into Shimei, right? Who's hurling slanders and cursings and all kinds of accusations against him. And whenever David returns, his men advocate to kill the guy. Says he has insulted the king. He's not fit to live. David says, I'll let him mock. Let him throw his insults at me. My own son rose up against me. How can he be any more insufferable than that, right? Mm-hmm. But then whenever David died, what did he tell Solomon? He said, watch that guy. He's trouble, right? He says, you're a wise man. You know what to do with him. So Solomon puts him in the city where he keep an eye on him. Says, if you leave the bounds of the city, you're going to die that day. And he does good for a few years. And then one of his servants run away, or a couple of his servants run away. And he goes down to the Philistines, down to Achish, I think it is, to go and collect his servants. And Solomon is there waiting on him whenever he gets back and says, I told you not to leave, off with your head. Right? And it was because of this man, they knew his character, they knew what kind of a man he was, and they also knew how he was prone to use his mouth for trouble. Right? So his mouth got him into trouble. Psalm 57 and 4, just over a page in my Bible. It says, my soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of man, men whose teeth are as spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. So once again, we got the tongue as a sharp sword. This was whenever David was hiding from Saul in the cave. Felt like he was going to get devoured, right? And one of the problems that he had whenever he was running from Saul, he hadn't done anything wrong, had he? But he was falsely accused, just like Jesus. Saul said, he's trying to do all these things. He's causing trouble. He's trying to overthrow my throne, all these things. And David was just going out and doing what Saul should have been doing. We got Psalm 140 in verse 3. They have sharpened their tongues like a serpent. Adder's poison is under their lips, Selah. So, sharp tongue, right? And so what it is that we see here in verse number 18 is that there are people, and I believe fools, we're still talking about fools, aren't we? Foolish people are using their tongue to cause people hurt, to harm people. They can use sharp words. They can use biting insults. They can use sarcasm. We speak sarcasm, but there's different ways that you can use it, isn't there? Whenever we are doing it to harm someone, to tear someone down, to try to make them look foolish or to hurt them, that's a wrong use of it, isn't it? But there's also ways that it can be used for humor. But maturity and growth is knowing the difference between them and knowing when it's appropriate, because it's not to be used for hurt. It's not to be used to harm people. Even jokes, practical jokes, all of those kind of things are to be done, if you're doing them, not to harm people, not to tear down people, not to cut them up. I guess that's where bullying would come in, wouldn't it? It's kind of like the word of the day in the culture, isn't it? But anyway, I'm meddling. But no, this is where we have to be careful, especially those who have a quick wit and a sharp tongue. We have to make sure that we are not using it for evil. That we're not doing harm to other people. We're not tearing down people. We are not cutting them up with our mouths, with our tongue. But instead, whenever we look at the last part of this verse, but the tongue of the wise is health. So with the very same mouth, you can cause hurt or healing. And that is a choice that we have to make. And so if we are wise and if we are righteous, if we are seeking to honor God, we are going to use our mouths for healing and not for hurting. Okay? It doesn't mean that we don't confront sin or that we don't take a firm stand, but that we need to always speak the truth in love. And I believe the difference in all these things is our motive. What is it that we are trying to do? Okay? If we're going to let them have it, or I'll show them, I'm going to make them feel bad. They made me feel bad. I'm going to make them feel bad. There's problems there, right? I'm going to show them that I'm right and they're wrong, that I'm smarter than they are. Wrong motives. But if our motive, whenever we're talking to someone, is to help them, if they are wrong and if they are in sin or something like that, we are trying to point them in the right direction, trying to help them, gently nudge them, if nothing else. Not just kick them and bruise them and hurt them and show them what an idiot they are. Right? There's a huge difference there. And so when we say hard things out of care and concern and the right spirit, it's going to bring health and not hurt, even hard conversations. But it has to be done the right way. And that's where wisdom comes in. A fool is going to come into those things and make it worse. A wise man will be able to tactfully use his words for with care and concern for the other person in a way to bring help and healing. You don't have to get mad right now. Okay, verse 19. The lip of truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. A lie might feel like a quick solution or an easy way out of a problem, right? You get yourself in a tough spot, and it's like, I'll just bend the truth a little bit. I'll just stretch it, just a little white lie. They'll never know. It never hurt anybody, right? But is that the truth? See, whenever we lie to get ourselves out of a problem, it just kicks the problem a little further down the road and gives it time to grow, right? Rather than dealing with it, we cover it up. And when we cover it up, what we've done is we've planted it for us to reap later on. And that's what this verse is talking about in verse 19, where it says, a lying tongue is but for a moment. That lying tongue might help for now, but it's going to hurt later on. The lies that we are telling are not going to be anything for us to build upon. It's not going to be anything for us to benefit from. Instead, it's going to all cause more problems than we ever imagined just a little bit further down the road. But in the first part of that verse, it says the lip of truth shall be established forever. So the idea of something being established forever, it is safe, it is secure, it is lasting, it is steady, it is stable, right? And so we can either be building on something shaky and shoddy and short-lived, or something that is stable and sturdy and eternal. Whether we're going to build on lies or build on truth, that's our choice. But it tells us ahead of time, over and over here, that if we go the path of lies, we're going to only be causing greater harm and shame for ourselves later on. And that truth is always, as they say, honesty is the best policy. And so anyway, lies eventually crumble. They eventually make a big mess. But truth is eternal. And there's ultimate safety in truth. There's no fear in being found out. No waiting for consequences. No needing further lies. Because that's what ends up happening. You tell a lie, and it doesn't last very long, and you have to tell another lie, and to keep kind of shoring up the original lie, right? And if you just tell the truth, that takes care of it. Lies, like most sin, promise immediate but temporary relief or pleasure. They're tempting, but the wise man knows that they are not worth it. Okay, so the lip of truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Verse 20, deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil, but to the counselors of peace is joy. So we're contrasting deceit and joy. That seems a little bit weird, doesn't it? But what goes with deceit? In deceit, there's conflict, isn't there? In deceit, there is a conflict, a competition, a pulling of two different directions. Whenever we think of deceit, we are thinking of lies and deception, of trying to get someone to believe something that's not true. Isn't that what we usually think of with deceit? And so ultimately what deceit does is it causes problems. It causes trouble. And so as we look at that and apply it to this verse in verse 20, it says, deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil. So those who are setting their mind and their heart on things which are wrong, things which are evil, those who are imagining or thinking up wicked things, they're going to have deceit or treachery or trouble in their hearts. Okay? And so with that, they're going to have trouble, a troubled heart. No peace, no joy, right? The heart and the mind and the actions are all interlinked. So trouble in the hands also makes trouble in the mind and trouble in the heart, right? And so if his thoughts are evil, if in him is deceit, he is going to be a troubled person. But whenever we look and contrast these counselors of peace, a counselor of peace, it's someone who is thinking up ways to peace. Rather than causing trouble, they are looking for solutions to trouble. See the difference there? So one is scheming and plotting and planning and causing more turmoil and chaos in his life. The other one is looking for, how can I solve this? How can I deal with this? How can I bring about peace in this situation? In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 9, in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, he says, blessed are the peacemakers, the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the peacemakers. Now, he's not talking about peacekeepers. What's the difference between a peacekeeper and a peacemaker? Any idea? If you're trying to keep the peace, what are you doing? Okay. Whenever you guys are babysitting, a lot of times you're trying to keep the peace, aren't you? You're just trying to placate people enough. You're just trying to keep problems from boiling over. You're just trying to keep things manageable, right? Covering or satisfying, but not actually dealing with or fixing, right? And so that is the difference between a peacekeeper and a peacemaker. A peacekeeper is someone who a lot of times ignores the problems, sweeps them under the rug, just tries to make people get along well enough to get by, right? But Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. Someone who makes peace is someone who is actually dealing with the problems. See the difference? Is someone who is actually looking for solutions, is solving things, is fixing things. Rather than just making sure these two don't kill each other, how about we bring them back together and restore the relationship? See what the difference would be? Whenever we think about the guards or the police officers or whatever we want to look at there, they are peacekeepers, not peacemakers. They are just to keep a lid on things, keep things civil. Because to actually make peace is deeper heart work. And so that would come down to counselors and therapists and things like that are actually getting into the problems and solving the problems rather than just keeping them at bay. That makes sense, everybody? But the reason I'm bringing that out is in verse number 20, it says, but to the counselors of peace. I was applying that to a peacemaker, a counselor of peace. Someone who's giving counsel, someone is giving advice, is solutions. They are seeking after peace. The first part of that is they were seeking evil, imagining evil. Now these ones are seeking after peace. The ones who are seeking after evil get trouble, get deceit, get a divided heart and get problems and putting people at odds against one another, right? But the one who is seeking reconciliation, right? Bible says that we have a work of reconciliation. We're reconciling people to each other and people to God. That's one of the ways that we are peacemakers, is to get people to where they have peace with God, right? And so it says, to the counselors of peace, there's joy. Fix the problem, move on. Then you can be happy about it. But if you're just trying to stuff it down and trying to, not going to be any joy there. And if you're just creating bigger problems, there's not going to be any joy there. Okay. So they're not making trouble. They're seeking solutions to trouble. They're dealing with the trouble. They're resolving the trouble. And that's why they have joy. Right? Now, is dealing with the trouble a joyful process? No, but whenever it is dealt with and fixed, it is satisfying, right? Okay, our final verse tonight, verse 21. There shall no evil happen to the just, but the wicked shall be filled with mischief. At first glance, this verse is a bit confusing. There shall no evil happen to the just. Right? So does that mean that bad things won't happen to good people? Because that's definitely not our experience in this world, is it? So we look at it and say, of course, bad things happen to good people. And if we take it that direction, and it says there shall no evil happen to the just, we end up like Job's friends. Job, look at all this evil that happened to you. It's because you're a sinner. If you weren't a sinner, this wouldn't happen to you. Right? But whenever we look a little deeper, the word that's translated evil here, it has the idea associated with it of evil things that happen in vain, evil for nothing. Okay? And so, essentially, this is the Old Testament equivalent to Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for good to them who love God, to them who are called according to his purpose, right? Doesn't say that all things are going to be good, but that God is working all things together for good. And this is the heart of this verse. And verse 21, there shall no evil happen to the just. Why? Because all of the bad things that is happening is for our ultimate good, because we've got God working in us and for us, and through us, right? The ultimate example of this, I believe, in the Bible is that of Joseph. Joseph had a lot of bad things happen to him, didn't he? But at the end of his life, he says, you meant them to me for evil, but God turned them to good. Essentially, whenever he got to the place that he was at when his brothers found him, he'd already realized that all of those bad things were necessary to get him to where God wanted him to be. Right? We see the same thing with David. David had a lot of bad things happen to him on his way to the throne. But it was the way that God was leading him to the throne. Without Saul and without the armies and without the Philistines and without the running from Saul and all those things, would he have made it straight from the sheepfold to the palace? That was just part of the journey. And if God would have taken him straight from being a shepherd and made him a king, do you think he would have been a good king? A couple things about that is he was learning from Saul how it felt to be oppressed by the king. You ever think of that? And all of the times that David was being chased by Saul and mistreated by Saul, he says, this is my nation's leader. This is my king. This is the one that is supposed to be looking out for me and keeping me safe. And he is trying to kill me, right? And whenever he became king, he could look back and say, I don't want any of my people to feel what I felt when I was running from Saul. That's a great lesson, right? Not only that, but he was gaining favor of the people. He was getting opportunities to prove himself, to show himself. there were multiple opportunities where he behaved himself wisely in front of all of the people and gained the people's respect because of the way he behaved in adverse situations. Right? Plenty of chances for him to grow in his faith in God. Plenty of chances for him to grow in his ability as a leader and a fighter and a soldier. And so if he would have just easily went from David the shepherd to David the king without everything in between, he wouldn't be properly prepared, and he probably would have went down in history as being a pretty poor king. But he ended up being the benchmark for kings. No one was a king like David. And it took all the hardships that he went through. So whenever we look at verse 21, there shall no evil happen to the just. Might be uncomfortable situations, maybe some difficult times, hard times, things what we wish we could skip past. But in the end, they are not evil because they're ultimately for our good and for our growth, right? But, because there's always a but, right? The wicked shall be filled with mischief. See, here's the thing. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. The steps of a bad man, good luck, right? He has no assurance. He has no help. God is not helping the unjust. He's not helping the wicked. He's not helping the unrighteous. He's not helping the lost man. They have no assurance. They have no help in that. Instead, they have the principle of sowing and reaping. And for them to be unjust and to be wicked and to be unrighteous means that one day they will reap what they've sown. And so with that, they cannot take heart whenever they're going through a difficult time, a hard time. Imagine a lost man, he's facing hardship, difficulty, he's got cancer or something like that. He can't say, well, the Lord will help me through this. I know God's got something good that's going to come out of this. God's going to use this in some way. Nope. You just got cancer. But for the saved man, God can use that in his life and make it, cause him to grow through it, cause him to be a witness to help to other people and bring great things in his life because of what he goes through. Huge difference, right? So anyway, there shall no evil happen to the just, but the wicked shall be filled with mischief. So we'll stop there. Call tonight. Kind of a summary. The fool, verse 15, rejects counsel. Verse 16, he lacks self-control. Verse 17, he disregards truth. Verse 18, he's careless with his words. Verse 19, he has no future. Verse 20, he can't be trusted. And in verse 21, he lacks God's direction. So there you go.